I want to read now a rather long poem, which was a long time in coming to me. It derives from a person I met in Rome in 1954, and I've been thinking about him ever since. Our first night in Rome in 1954, we were taken around the city by a pleasant young Italian water engineer named Dino Rotundi. We'd met him on the boat, and he'd whizzed us all around Rome in his Alfa Romeo, saying, "There's the forum. Other points of interest, you know." And finally, after he'd rather breezily pointed out most of Rome to us, he took us to see what he regarded as the real wonder of the city. There was a, perhaps still is, a little joint near the Pantheon called the Pizzeria Sacrestia. And it wasn't really a pizzeria. It was a restaurant and bar and hangout. And there was at this place an extraordinary man, lank, ill-looking, either saintly or diabolical in aspect. He played the guitar and sang off-color songs. When not doing that, he would come to your table on request and for a couple of cigarettes or a bit of wine, he would read your mind. And, well, he simply did read our minds then and many times thereafter while we were in Rome. And we used to enjoy taking skeptical friends around to have their hearts broken by this man. One person we took was the Norton professor of Italian at Harvard, a fine theologian but a thorough skeptic, sort of person who doesn't want to believe in poltergeists because he thinks if he does, he may have to believe in God. And this friend of ours, you asked your questions of the mind reader in the form of a written scribble in Italian. And our friend wrote, "Where can I find an autograph manuscript of Boccaccio?" To which the mind reader gave this answer, "Stop looking. There is no such thing as an autographed manuscript of Boccaccio." I guess fairly good mind reading. The mind reader once said to the professor, who became an unwilling but complete convert, "It isn't pleasant, you know, to have a mind that's like a common latrine." And since writing this poem, I've heard of other mind readers who suffered similarly. Well, he's talking, the mind reader, to my professor friend in 1955. "Some things are truly lost. Think of a sun hat laid for the moment on a parapet while three young women, one perhaps in mourning, talk in the crenellate shade. A slight wind plucks and budges it. It scuffs to the edge and cartwheels into a giant view of some description. Haggard escarpments, if you like, plunge down through mica shimmer to a moss of pines, amidst which, here or there, a half-seen river lobs up a blink of light. The sun hat falls with what free flirts and stoops you can imagine down through that reeling vista or another, unseen by any, even by you or me. It is as when a pipe wrench catapulted from the jounced back of a pickup truck dives headlong into a bushy culvert, or a book whose reader is asleep, garbling the story, glides from beneath a steamer chair and yields its flurried pages to the printless sea. It is one thing to escape from consciousness, as such things do, another to be pent in the dream cache or stony oubliette of someone's head. They found when I was little that I could tell the place of missing objects. I stood by the bed of a girl or the frayed knee of an old man whose face was lost in shadow. When did you miss it, people would be saying. Where did you see it last? And then those voices, querying or replying, came to sound like cries of birds when the leaves race and whiten and a black overcast is shelving over. The mind is not a landscape, but if it were, there would in such case be a tilted moon wheeling beyond the wood through which you groped, its fine spokes breaking in the tangled thickets. There would be obfuscations, paths which turned to dried up stream beds, hemlocks which invited through shiny clearings to a groundless shade. And yet in a sure stupor, you would come at once upon dilapidated cairns, abraded moss, and half-healed blazes, leading to where, around the turning of a fear, the lost thing shone. Imagine a railway platform. The long cars come to a cloudy halt beside it, and the fogged windows offering a view neither to those within nor those without. Now, in the crowd, forgive my predilection, is a young woman standing amidst her luggage, expecting to be met by you, a stranger. See how she turns her head, the eyes engaging and disengaging, pausing and shying away. It is like that with things put out of mind, as the queer saying goes. A lost key hangs trammeled by threads in what you come to see as the webbed darkness of a sewing basket, flashing a little. Or a photograph misplaced in an old ledger turns its bled, oblivious profile to rebuff your vision, yet glistens with the fixative of thought. What can be wiped from memory? Not the least meanness, obscenity, humiliation, terror which made you clench your eyes, or pulse of happiness which quickened your despair. Nothing can be forgotten, as I am not permitted to forget. It was not far from that to this corner cafe table, where with my lank gray hair and vatic gaze, I sit and drink at the receipt of custom. They come here day and night, so many people, sad women of the quarter, dressed in black as to a black confession, blinking clerks who half suppose that Taurus ruminates upon their destinies, men of affairs down from Milan to clear it with the Magus before they buy or sell some stock or other, my fellow drunkards, fashionable folk mocking and ravenously credulous, and skeptics bent on proving me a fraud for fear that some small wonder unexplained should leave a fissure in the world and all St. Michael's host come flapping back. I give them paper and pencil, turn away and light a cigarette, as you have seen me do. They write their questions, fold them up. I lay my hand on theirs and go into my frenzy, raising my eyes to heaven, snorting smoke, lolling my head as in the fumes of Delphi, and then, with shaken, spirit-guided fingers, set down the oracle. All that, of course, is trumpery, since 9 times out of 10, what words float up within another's thought surface as soon in mine, unfolding there like paper flowers in a water glass. In the 10th case, I sometimes cheat a little. That shocks you? But consider, what I do cannot, so most conceive, be done at all. And when I fail, I am a charlatan even to such as I have once astounded. Whereas a tailor can miscut my coat and be a tailor still. I tell you this because you know that I have the gift, the burden. Whether or not I put my mind to it, the world usurps me ceaselessly. My sixth and never-resting sense is a cheap room, black with the anger of insomnia, whose wallboards vibrate with the mutters, plaints, and flushings of the race. What should I tell them? I have no answers. Set your fears at rest, I scribble when I must. Your paramour is faithful, and your spouse is unsuspecting. You were not seen that day beneath the fig tree. Still, be more cautious. When the time is ripe, expect promotion. I foresee a message from a far person who is rich and dying. You are admired in secret. If, in your judgment, profit is in it, you should take the gamble. As for these fits of weeping, they will pass. It makes no difference that my lies are bald and my evasions casual. It contents them not to have spoken, yet to have been heard. What more do they deserve if I could give it, mute breathers as they are of selfish hopes and small anxieties? Faith, justice, valor, all those reputed rarities of soul confirmed in marble by our public statues, you may be sure that they are rare indeed where the soul mopes in private and I listen. Sometimes I wonder if the blame is mine. If through a sullen fault of the mind's ear, I miss a resonance in all their fretting. Is there some huge attention, do you think, which suffers us and is inviolate, to which all hearts are open, which remarks the sparrow's weighty fall, and overhears in the worst rancor a deflected sweetness? I should be glad to know it. Meanwhile, saved by the shrewd habit of concupiscence, which like a visor narrows my regard, and drinking studiously until my thought is a blind lowered almost to the sill, I hanker for that place beyond the sparrow, where the wrench beds in mud, the sun hat hangs in densest branches, and the book is drowned. Ah, you have read my mind. One more, perhaps. A mezzo litro. Grazie, professore.